The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
Rory McIlroy, first and foremost, though, the centre of attention after that career Grand Slam last night. Nathan Murphy is with me from Off the Ball. We're going to hear from Nathan in just a moment, but tonight they're obviously going to be talking about this in great, great detail. They've got a stellar lineup of guests, including Paul McGinley, who says Rory is not finished yet, going to win many, many more. Take a listen.
I have said past couple of years, if he wins one, he'll win three or four. And nothing gives me reason to think that won't happen. I think his game is in a great place, and he also plays a game that's got longevity in it. He's one of the longest hitters in the game. As he goes up towards his 40s, he's going to lose a bit of that power and that bit of distance. But when you're so far ahead in terms of distance off the tee, and even if he loses 5%, which is kind of normal between now and the age of 40 or just over 40, loses 5% of his power, he's still going to be good enough to be able to compete and contend at the very, very top of the game. So barring injury, he's got a game that will stand the test of time. And there's certainly another window of maybe even 10 years that he can contend at the very, very top level and not feel like age is catching up with him, barring injury. So I think the ambition is there now, is to chase down as many majors as he can. Certainly chasing down Nick Faldo is the next thing in his sights, who has won six majors. Rory's now on five. I know that will be a big thing for him to be the European who's won the most majors. So getting to seven, well, first of all, getting six and then to seven, I would say would be his immediate goals. And he's not finished yet. I really do believe there's going to be more majors. And now maybe like it's a pressure release valve now that's been released, that he may become a little bit more unburdened. Less pressure as you get to these majors and kind of, you know, get those pointy elbows out and off you go.
Yeah, that is Paul McGinley. You can hear that interview in full with Nathan tonight on Off the Ball. And Nathan Murphy with me now. Were you as nervous as I was last night?
Oh, I don't think I've ever witnessed a more thrilling, gut-wrenching, dramatic night of sport. Never mind night of golf. I've lost every bit of adrenaline that was in my body. I'm just zonked. Padraig Harrington and Paul McGinley are talking about what might happen next. I'm still trying to come to terms with what we saw last night.
I was trying to work it out. I think there was three times I kind of threw my hands up in despair. Like, he's doing it again. He's doing it again.
I was taking notes for our Golf Weekly podcast all the way through, which are about 3,000 words at this stage. And on four separate occasions, I wrote, "It's over." Which, it turned out in hindsight, maybe I got a little bit carried away. And it was over. It felt with nine holes to go, this was done. And I thought it was going to be a Lowry or Portrush style procession. He was four or five shots clear. And then, just out of nothing, this inexplicable mistake at 13. One of the easiest shots you could play around Augusta.
Yeah.
85, 86 yards, little chip, and he sticks it in Rae's Creek. And from there, what happened over the next 90 minutes is unforgettable. And he somehow managed to condense every opinion that's been had of him over the last 11 years into that 90 minutes. And all of them were correct. Like, the brilliance of the shots under pressure on 15 and on 17 and then on the playoff hole, that's somebody at the absolute peak of their powers. There's very few players in the history of the game who can hit those sort of shots. But what happened at 13 and the missed putt on 18, considering he missed a putt from similar distance at Pinehurst for the US Open, anyone who'd questioned his mentality or his bottle or any of that will have felt, yeah, this is exactly what we spoke about. But for him to somehow come out of that and win the playoff and get to that highest echelon of golf and first Irish person to win the Masters, but, you know, in golfing terms, the first European for the career Grand Slam.
I was going through hole by hole earlier, and I think there was only three holes that he effectively played in regulation. You know, the 6th, the 12th and the 16th, where he hit the green in regulation and two-putted. Every other hole, he either birdied, bogeyed, double bogeyed, or he may have parred, but he parred from an absolutely remarkable spot, like stuck in behind trees and massive big hooks around to kind of 2 or 3 feet. Three holes out of 18, he went to plan.
And that was from hole one and the double bogey on the first hole. And he was very honest in his post-round interviews about how nervous he was. And I sort of assumed, again, because of all of the near misses he's had over previous years, he would have found a way of dealing with those Sunday morning nerves. But there was just so much at stake. There was so much history at stake. And he had so much history with Augusta that it clearly was too much for him. And I think he just stumbled over the line. I think he just had the right shots at the right time. And Justin Rose left it too late. Bryson DeChambeau was a non-event. It got to him more than it even got to Rory. Never put up any sort of a fight after those first couple of holes. But this is, you just couldn't both have a big, big smile in your face last night when you think of what McIlroy has gone through. I know there was a long period where I think he divided opinion for some reason that I think golf fans liked them, but non-golf fans were never quite sure. I really feel over the last couple of years,
I don't want to get into a debate about partition, but...
Absolutely.
It was a feature in it, and where does his allegiance lie? That soured him in a lot of people's
minds.
Well,
why doesn't he wrap himself up in the tricolour?
Exactly.
When he won last year at the Zurich Classic with Shane Lowry, the tricolour was thrown up on stage and it was sort of quickly thrown off stage, and he has expertly navigated his way around all that, and to his credit, because... it would be a major talking point on all these sort of occasions.
Yeah.
But I think maybe from, you remember back in 2019 in Portrush, where it's the Open Championship is on home soil and his local course, where he spent so much time playing as a youngster, and he has a quadruple bogey on the first.
Yeah.
And the emotion that he let out that day, I think, endeared him to a lot of people. And it's been very emotional since then.
He's had a lot of the Ryder Cup as well. I think a lot of people appreciate, they kind of responded to that as well. But there was a lot of emotion yesterday. That's what I was struck by. When he hit that amazing shot in the seventh, you know, up through the trees. And as I always say to myself, when I'm always behind trees, I say, you know what, the volume of a tree is 90% air. But I rarely find that at 90%. Rory did. And it was amazing. But Harry Diamond, I think his caddy, made some joke about he never listens to me. And the two of them started roaring laughing. And I thought, what is going on here?
Harry had told him to just chip out. And Rory said, no, I'm doing this.
Yeah.
And as you say, found the one little pocket of space.
But then he was frustrated as well. He was down on his hands and knees nearly at one stage. He was kind of throwing clubs back down into his bag in disgust. We have this enduring image of... McIlroy from 2011, you know, with his hands on the top of his driver and his head in between them. And part of the reason we do is, well, it was this kind of national heartache we had watching him. But also, he's so stoic a lot of the time while he's playing. Might cry afterwards, but stoic while playing. Yesterday, it all came out at times.
And that was even in total contrast to what we saw on Saturday, where there was just the game face on. And when he hit these sensational shots, straight away you could tell he was going back to his work with Bob Rotella, and he'd have a quick smile and then it was, I'm all business. But that's what makes last night just so hard to figure out, because you know, I've spoken to Padraig Harrington at length today, to Paul McGinley at length, and we're talking about Bob Rotella and his influence on the mental side of the game. Like, well, did that work or did it not work? Because I'm not quite sure, because in the moments that mattered, actually, it really felt like it didn't. Again, his wedge play was a big issue.
Where was Bob Rotella when he was chunking the ball into Ray's Creek?
That's what I mean. Like, everyone's talking about the improvements he's made with his wedge play. Well, he had an 86-yard wedge and he stuck it in the water. But, again, the quality of shot, particularly in that playoff hole, remember, Justin Rose has really put it up to him, and Rose is very unlucky that doesn't roll back a couple of feet closer.
Yeah.
And McIlroy, under that bit of pressure, delivered. And now, as we go through time, the drama of it will sort of fade away, and the only thing that will matter is that he has that career Grand Slam, that he has that green jacket, and the many perks that go with it.
I wonder as well, and I know McGinley touched on it there, you'll hear more detail of that tonight on the show, and I'm sure Harrington will get into it as to what comes next. Rory will always come with this huge weight of expectation on the shoulders, and now it'll be, can you do the calendar Grand Slam? Can you get to 10? Can you beat Faldo, as you say? Can you get to 10? Can you get to 14 and suddenly catch a Tiger? You know, all these questions would be asked of him. But, and this is the point Enda McNulty made here in the show earlier, they all come kind of cloaked with positivity. They're kind of positive things to aim for. Whereas the expectation over the last few years, that's 3 or 4 years, has been almost universally kind of couched in negativity. Is Rory a choker? Can Rory handle it? And that's all gone.
Instantly gone. And it doesn't matter.
Despite the fact that he seemed to choke three different times and still win.
That's the point. It doesn't matter. None of that matters. He won. Yeah. He won. And the outpouring of emotion, it sort of felt as though he had forgotten instantly about all of those things that had happened because he got over the finish line. And if ever there was a year that he was going to get a season Grand Slam, which, remember, has never been done, this will be it. So the next major is just a month away, and like, it's such a condensed golf calendar now. You basically have a major April, May, June and July back in Portrush for the Open Championship. It's in Quail Hollow.
He loves Quail Hollow.
He's won four times at Quail Hollow.
Yeah.
It is basically like a pitch and putt course for him. So he will go in there as raging, raging hot favourite. That will obviously bring another type of pressure because, well, why wouldn't you win this, Rory? You've got the monkey off your back now. This should all flow easily for you. And that will bring probably a different type of pressure. And I'm sure he's going to go and enjoy himself over the next few weeks and try and get out of the spotlight a little bit. Hopefully we'll see him back here in Ireland as well. And he comes back and he visits his parents. But when you look at Quail Hollow and Portrush as the open venue, there is an opportunity now for him to start racking up a few majors quite quickly. Harrington has said for years he felt that he had the ability and the talent to be getting towards 10.
Yeah.
It felt for a long time that when you can only win four in, as it was, 14 or 15 years, to try and win that all over again in a short space of time at the age he's getting to would always be difficult. Though.
He doesn't really have any niggles. You know, you worry about the pressure they put under their bodies and all of that kind of ways they twist their backs and everything. He seems to have avoided that. And a lot of that's probably gym work.
Well, and, you know, he has always looked like one of the fittest players out on tour. Yeah. And, you know, McGinley, I think, touched on it there. He's never had any great problems with his swing. He still hits the ball as long as anybody on tour. All the other parts of his game have got better and better over the last couple of years as well. And already what he's done, and pre-Masters, when we were discussing, Rory, I've made this point of, to his greatness, is his longevity. You look at the world's top 10 when he was breaking into it back in 2010. None of those guys are relevant anymore.
Do an exercise now. Go back and look at the world's top 10 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 15 years ago. And there's only one name on the planet who's common across those lists.
And ironically, the one guy who might be close is Justin Rose, who also hung around there.
True.
But now he's going to be able to play the Masters for the rest of his life. He can play the USPGA at least 60. He can play the Open till he's 60. So that's, you know, 24, 25 more opportunities at all of these majors. And it would have been wrong, and it will be wrong, if he doesn't end up as the most successful European golfer. I think last night means he's the greatest.
Yeah.
Because greatness is about more than just the medals and the trophies. And he has the Seve style character and personality that endears him to people. Faldo might have won more major, but I don't think anybody believes, even Faldo himself, doesn't believe that he's a better golfer than Rory McIlroy.
All right. We don't have time to debate that one, I'm not sure. Nathan Murphy from Off the Ball, thank you very much. Nathan tonight is going to be chatting to Paul McGinley in much more detail, Patrick Harrington as well, and much more besides.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.